Hello, and welcome to AAPT Comics Podcast, the number one podcast on AAPTcomics.com. This is episode 25, and I just want you all to know that 25 is the symbol of introspection. So we might get a little deep in this episode. We might talk about ourselves, all right? We also talk about comic books. And when I say we, I mean the royal we, in that Forrest Hollingsworth here with me, and I am David Brooke. And what... Wait, are you there? Are you there for it? I can't hear you.
I am. I'm here. I'm prepared to talk about myself, just like you said.
I felt so lonely since this is an introspective episode.
No, it's me, Forrest with two R's, and I'm happy to announce that I'm shifting into soup mode.
Soup mode.
Yep.
Wow. Is it chunky?
No further comment at this time.
My God. I hope there's milk in it, because that's the best kind of soup.
One more comment at this time. What the fuck?
Chowder, come on, right?
Okay,
everyone
okay,
loves chowder.
Sure.
Look, I'm in Boston, all right? We gotta eat our chowder.
Okay, sure.
We also gotta talk about comic books, where in this show we talk about the latest news, the best books of last week. We talk about the week ahead. We have guests on, including Jordan White a couple weeks ago, and a couple guests lining up for the next few weeks. It's gonna be fun. We open our show with the latest news, just so that we can keep you up to date right up front on the top of the show. So this isn't in any specific order, but this is kind of an interesting and big news item. DC Comics is offering returnability on Event Leviathan number 2 and Jimmy Olsen number 1. And it's an interesting little algorithm they have.
Yeah.
Where, do you want to get into it?
Go for it.
So Event Leviathan number 2 must match or exceed the orders of Batman Who Laughs number 1.
Main cover.
Right. If they meet that threshold, they get up to 50% of their stock in the issue can be refundable for credit. So basically, wait, what does that even mean?
So if a shop buys as many copies or more copies of Event Leviathan number 2 as they bought of the main cover of Batman Who Laughs number 1, and then they don't sell that many copies or whatever...
Yep.
They can sell back 50% of their stock to DC for credit.
That's really interesting to me.
They've done this with other books before. They do returnability on books they're really, really confident with.
Right.
But never in this, as far as I know, never in this weird comparing one book to another book way.
That's what it feels like. To me, in my mind, this is Scott Snyder versus Brian Michael Bendis. Since Snyder wrote Batman Who Laughs number 1 and Bendis is behind Event Leviathan number 2. The other weird thing is the number 1 issues always sell better than number 2 issues, no matter what it is, right? And they are banking on the fact that Event Leviathan number 2 is going to sell as much, if not more, than Batman Who Laughs number 1.
Right.
That's a bold move, Cotton.
Right. Yeah, I think the other matchup makes a lot more sense. Jimmy Olsen number 1... orders must match or exceed Action Comics number 1006, and any unsold copies can be returned for credit. That doesn't even have the up to 50% of their stock. So that Event Leviathan thing is like way out of the norm. The Jimmy Olsen one is already closer to the normal returnability model, where any unsold stock can be returned. And it also makes sense to compare... Well, actually, Jimmy Olsen is... Matt Fraction that's writing that, but it makes a little bit more sense in that you have Bendis, who's hewing close to this Action Comics thing, and then you have Matt Fraction coming on and spinning out of that with Jimmy Olsen and stuff. It seems like an event that's very close to itself, or a lot of books that are very close to themselves, rather than how wildly different Event Leviathan and Batman Who Laughs are.
The other thing that's interesting about the second match or exceed deal here is that Action Comics number 1006 wasn't like a banner issue. It wasn't like the first issue of an arc or...
Right.
It wasn't this highly anticipated hot book. So to have it go up against Jimmy Olsen number 1, which I'm sure is going to have higher sales than number 2 because people are going to be dipping their toes in and tasting it and seeing if they like it. It just, that seems like a no-brainer. Like, that's probably going to sell as much as Action Comics number 1006, especially since they're both... based on characters in the same universe or the same realm, right? Like Smallville.
Right. Right.
I don't know. Kind of interesting. I really want to see. We need to follow up on this and see if Event Leviathan number 2 sold as much as Batman Who Laughs number 1, because that could mean some major losses for DC if it doesn't.
I mean, that's it's huge. I think they do it for books that they're really, really confident in. I almost wonder if it's a trick. Like, if they're trying to trick retailers into being like, look how confident we are in this book.
Yes.
You know, it's strange because Batman Who Laughs Number One is like one of the most anticipated and best-selling books of the year. Mm-hmm. Like, I know Event Leviathan, people are stoked for it. It's been built up for a long time. It kind of seems like the full realization of Bendis taking the reins of the DC universe, and people are really excited for that alone. But I don't know, comparing it to Snyder and the way that people go rabid for Snyder Batman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It seems weird.
I mean, his name's in the top 10 or top 5 of every month for sales.
Every month. Every month. Yeah.
If there's enough of the books sitting on a shelf, it's almost like free marketing.
Yeah. I guess. Maybe.
Speaking of free marketing, this show talks a lot about comic books that it might sell better because you're listening to this. But in our next bit of news, Scott Snyder has big plans for Justice Society of America reuniting with the Justice League. Yes, that's right. The 1940s superhero team is coming back to fight Lex Luthor and his Legion of Doom as they take over in Year of the Villain. And this is kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting that they're pulling out these old characters that can now be polished and made brand new again. Also, I think they're still in the mindset of the 40s, so that could potentially add some kind of look at society, how it changed. Maybe, I mean, they could all be bigots for all we know.
Right. I think it does set up a really interesting place for like poignant social commentary or commentary on like heroism. Mm-hmm. That's stuff that Snyder likes to write about.
Right.
He likes to make his characters' ideals line up with commentary on American politics generally, but also like socio-political politics, global politics, all sorts of stuff, pretty bluntly, I would say.
Yeah, Snyder says in this interview at Newsarama, he wants to show how morally ambiguous a time it was for this the Justice Society.
Right.
So that's actually kind of interesting to me.
Yeah.
And that's probably why they're all white dudes.
That's the other thing I was going to say. It's like these characters haven't been seen since New 52, arguably because of Doomsday Clock, because Dr. Manhattan has been moving stuff around, but also obviously because Dr. Manhattan in the case of Doomsday Clock is just the voice of the editors. It gets weird and confusing. Mm. It's, as Nathan and I were talking about in a previous issue, just DC in conversation with itself at this point, so I'm not really sure, but on two fronts, I can only name one Justice Society of America character off the top of my head.
Which one?
The Flash, Jay Garrick.
There's a gorilla dude.
Sure. I don't know the character's name. I mean, I know Hawkman, Sandman, Darman, Mr. Terrific, and Black Canary. Mm-hmm. But obviously, that's listing off names and stuff on live air isn't that interesting, but that's kind of the point that I'm trying to make. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's really for people that like getting into the nitty-gritty of stuff like this.
Yes.
That, like, probably remember the last time the Justice Society of America characters were in each individual book.
Right.
And where their character was at or where their mindset was at, that kind of stuff. So, I don't know.
It's definitely, there's a lot of potential to play around with, you know, what does it mean to be a superhero team? You know, obviously the 40s matching with the 2020 era of thinking. At the same time, it's a lot on top of everything else, isn't it? All these heroes fighting all these villains for the continuation of the universe. Meanwhile, these old-timers come out of nowhere on a time machine or whatever and try to save the day.
Yeah. I think that Snyder can pull it off.
Yeah.
I think that he's very good at taking these larger-than-life ideas that he has.
Yeah.
And making them tangible and granular on, like, he doesn't shove all of the ideas into one issue.
Yeah.
He usually, like, peppers them through. And sometimes they're even, like, ancillary details.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to understand them to get the full context of the comic. Obviously, those people that live in the details love them.
Right.
But I do kind of think that this is the inherent problem with Events comics. Mm. Where I'm like, how many Wikipedia pages am I going to have open to understand this?
Right. Hey, is this just like what Bendis did with the X-Men, the kid X-Men coming into the future? Only it's 1940s older folks who probably drink.
Only what if the opposite? Yeah, kind of.
And then some character like Beast is going to show up and be like, we need to send them back or everything will be ruined.
Wipe their minds.
Time travel. I don't know how it works. Also magnets. In our next bit of news, Rob Liefeld, what a jokester this guy is.
A literal comic character.
He said that DC Comics, specifically Jim Lee, they're old buddies, right? They were at the Image together.
Image, yeah. Right before Rob Liefeld left, right before Image got profitable.
Yeah, yeah. Right. He asked him if they could do a crossover with DC, combining his extreme line of characters. And it would be sometime before the end of the year, I think, even, which is crazy timing. We're already halfway through. How do you feel about this? Are you excited?
No. It doesn't really even sound like he's excited for it.
Yeah. I mean, he's been very critical of DC and how they're being managed, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Go look for that on some other comics news sites or any. I think there's probably still a conversation happening on Twitter, y'all.
Yeah.
Liefeld went off on DC. He said that they've got poor management, they've got poor marketing, they've got all sorts of other problems, and that their only solution is Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that he's wrong, at least in that out-the-gate statement.
Right.
And then it just went so off the rails. He started fighting with people.
Yeah.
He spent the whole day, like, fighting with people and shitposting and, like, posting these, like, close-up screenshots of people's faces that he was arguing with. It was weird. It was weird for Liefeld.
Right. Yeah. He clearly was upset.
And then he deleted. Yeah, for sure. And then he deleted his Twitter, which I was like, I kind of admire how much you are.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But also, whoa.
I mean, he's going to be back on Twitter, like, right? I mean, this.
Oh, for sure.
Marketing is like a big part of what he does.
Yeah. I mean, he's Kanye.
Yeah.
But. He did say, I just like a DC comic company that reflects the one that I grew up with, the one that produced Camelot 3000, Watchmen, Dark Knight, New Titans, and I'm not intimidated. I'll express it. That's just my opinion. I expressed it because I don't care the fallout. I don't care if there is an Image Comics DC Comics special and I'm left out as a result. Like, seriously, get out of here with that. So
this is something that he said in an article on Newsarama, by the way.
Yeah. I don't.
So it's lots of drama. I don't know. I mean, you know, the first thing that popped in my head isn't necessarily this drama, but why would DC want to do a crossover with Image? Is it to celebrate something?
It is. I mean, I have to think that Marvel and DC, all year, every year, they do anything you can do, I can do better.
Uh-huh.
And so you have Eric Larson and a bunch of Image Comics artists coming back to Marvel do special stories. You have Chris Claremont writing Marvel Presents. You have Liefeld doing Major X over there. And DC's like, oh, we want a cut of that pie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Marvel Comics 1000, huh? Fuck you. That was our idea, see?
Yep.
So I think they're just doing this weird sniping back and forth that they always do.
Yes. Yes.
And
you nailed it.
I don't think that anyone that runs either of these companies actually dislikes each
other. No, they need each other.
Need each other, as beneficial as it is to them to just do this. So I think that that's probably what it is. But it's interesting that the one person that seems the most integral to it is the least excited.
Yeah. He was like, they asked me, and I don't even want to do it, but I mean, I guess.
But I will do it. But don't cut me out. But if you do cut me out, it's fine. But don't.
Something else that Rob Liefeld was up to this week is Major X. Number 5 came out. And I actually wrote a little bit of news on this because it seemed important. This is a spoiler here, guys.
Did it, though.
Major X, this new hero who looks like Deadpool and is from the past, future, another dimension guy. We know that his dad is Cable. No, gasp. But now we find out that his mother is Storm. No, gasp. And in this issue, we find out that these baddies are going to try to kill his parents. Now, we know this story takes place in the 90s, the X-Men era of 90s, right? So we know they're not going to die, so there's absolutely no reason to be worried. But it is kind of interesting because the first place my mind went to was, wow, what would it be like if Cable and Storm got it on? That's weird. Could he give her the technovirus? Is that an STD? Can you transfer that?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. I don't want to talk about this.
Anyway, Storm is now a baby mama, and I guess...
Yeah. I mean, people shipped them for a long time.
Yes, I read somewhere that Liefeld was hinting at it way back when he was doing X-Men or X-Force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was. And then people shipped it for quite a while, long enough that it went through various stages where it died down and then it came back and then it died down. And now he's like, I'm back again.
Right.
So I don't know.
Well, in other news, Dial H for Hero and Wonder Twins is being increased to 12 issues each, which is cool. I mean, it's a good sign that books that don't necessarily have Superman or Batman or Spider-Man on the cover can sell well if done well. And we know the creators behind these two books are excellent ones who I think, you know, they keep showing how great they are at writing on like an indie scale or on a a title that doesn't necessarily scream, you know, $100,000, 100,000 issue sales. It makes me hopeful that someone like Mark Russell or who's the writer of Wonder Twins and Sam Humphries on the writer on Dial H for Hero are going to keep rising. And they are. I think they're just rising.
Yeah, absolutely. Russell said exactly what I want to hear out of someone that's writing Wonder Twins in this article. He said, the next six issues of Wonder Twins will be like the past six, part superhero deconstruction, part after-school special. What I love about writing the Wonder Twins is that it gives me a chance to write about the here and now, about the ass-crushed world we're leaving to young people, while simultaneously letting me travel back in time to tell my old teenage self what I wish somebody had told me then.
Inspiring.
And I think that that's, yeah, exactly. Exactly that. It is inspiring in a way. I love stories about someone saying, hey, I recognize that my generation is fucked up.
Right.
And I can't fix all the other people in my generation that have fucked this up for you, and I can't undo it.
Yeah.
But I want you to know, and I want you to take solace in the fact that some of us are on your side.
Mm-hmm.
And this story is for you.
We're always growing. We're always changing. We're always getting better. Make America great again. Wait.
Nope. I don't think that that's the message. Full stop. But I do think it's a little like, I share that sentiment where it's like, if my kids someday are like, hey, old man, sorry, but we got to put your head in the guillotine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know what? I get it. It's not me necessarily. It's everything that we let happen.
Right.
And I understand how you got here because I wished I had gotten to the point that you're at.
Right.
Right. And superhero stories are a great way to talk about those larger than life ideals.
For sure. Yeah.
And it's so fun and silly and weird anyway, too.
Yeah, I'm excited that they're doing that. It shows that DC has faith in them, but also because the sales are there. Vote with your wallets, listeners. Keep buying those books.
Especially as DC's in a weird restructuring, canceling time.
Right. Yes, that's a little bit of positive news. In some, I guess, positive news, a company called Graphite Comics is coming out with a new comic book streaming service called Graphite, which will feature Boom, IDW, Image, and others. I'm putting that in air quotes. And they're calling it the Netflix meets Spotify meets YouTube for comics. Wow, that's a lot. So it's a free service with ads, but for $4.99 a month, it's the premium, you get no ads. So basically you get to read whatever's on this app that's streaming, thousands of comics for free. That's pretty cool, huh?
Sure.
I mean, there are pirate sites out there right now where you can technically do this. It's technically the same thing, only this is above board, and hopefully
I mean, those pirate sites don't have a dedicated app and a dedicated reader, which I think holds them back.
And then the publishers aren't getting a cut of that, obviously.
Obviously that's the more outstanding problem. To be blunt, I don't really care that the publishers aren't getting a cut of that. I do care that the creators aren't getting a cut of that,
and inherently like might not get a job because too many people are pirating their book.
Right. And that's obviously a huge problem.
So this feels like another step in the right direction to potentially grow up the industry, because it can't be paper forever. We know that.
Yeah.
And yet Marvel and DC treat it very much so like it will be paper forever.
I mean, they have their dedicated platforms, DC Universe and Marvel Unlimited.
Yep.
And then they've also both bought into Comixology. Yep. I guess I just see, I'm wary of this because they haven't gotten them to bite yet.
Right.
And you know they pitched it to them.
Sure.
Yeah. And there's the buy-in's not there yet.
The buy-in isn't there yet, which makes me wary of how long it's going to be there. Obviously, it's free, so I'm a little bit more inclined to try it out. But I just see this as like a further fragmentation of that market. Mm-hmm. And I already feel like that market is so fragmented.
Right.
That it's risky for them to launch this.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe not necessarily risky for those other publishers to put content on it. It's good for them.
Yeah, I mean, more eyeballs on it, right?
More distribution channels and a dedicated app, stuff that cuts down on piracy. That's all good.
So back in 2015, I interviewed a guy who's the CEO of this company called Comic Blitz, which is a similar sort of service where it was about streaming multiple publishers. At the time, they had Valiant on board. I don't think they exist anymore.
Right.
This feels and sounds a lot like this, a similar sort of service. Yeah, theirs is $8 a month. It's unlimited access to your favorite comics, so it's actually more money. I don't know. I haven't heard a peep about this company in so long that I doubt they continuously add new titles, but Dynamite and Valiant are two of the folks that are contributing to it. I don't know. I think it's inherently going to be a part of where comics move forward as far as streaming. And people like streaming.
I think it absolutely should
be.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look at how Netflix has their own. For the longest time, they had all sorts of material, but now it's becoming more and more Netflix material only, right? Mm-hmm. And people are getting annoyed by that because now you got to buy like five streaming services to get all the stuff you want.
Right.
And it's sort of like we've sort of skipped over the streaming and stream it all in one platform. I mean, Comixology counts, but you don't get to like, there is Comixology Unlimited too, isn't there?
That's what I have.
It doesn't seem like it's going to go in the direction where there's one platform for everything. It's going to be Marvel has theirs, Valiant has theirs, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And everyone gets along sometimes for Comixology the same way they get along for Netflix or Hulu.
Right. But for pay, like Amazon, I guess.
But for pay.
Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting if it moves forward, but I doubt it. These companies are too big and have too much money to make to share the pie with some app developer on the side.
Right. I wish them the best.
Yeah, for sure.
But I oftentimes forget that I have that Comixology Unlimited subscription, to say nothing of the fact that I have DC Universe for Doom Patrol and Swamp Thing, and forget that there's comics
yeah.
on it all the fucking time.
I'm right there with you. I love Doom Patrol, and I forget there's comics on this thing. The way the app is built, I don't like it. It's like...
No. I guess that's where... I'm always inclined to say take a swing at this, because reading on my computer is not a great experience,
right,
even for comic reviews.
Right, right.
I was surprised by the number of people that read on Kindles.
Oh, man.
Because people are reading comics in black and white.
That's a bad idea.
Because they like reading on their Kindle that much. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you're just ruining your experience.
I think that's a huge ruin of the experience, unless you read manga.
Sure. But even then, like...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
You know, the other day I was trying to watch Swamp Thing episode 2, and I got, somehow I clicked a button, and there was no back, and I'm like, how does this app not have a back button?
Yeah,
what the hell?
Right. So if what it takes is these guys developing a platform that I think both us and probably these bigger publishers can see isn't really going to go anywhere, but if it can develop really, really good technology or a really good backbone for Comixology backed by Amazon or Marvel Unlimited or DC Universe or someone else to buy into or to be interested or to scoop up, that might be worthwhile. I obviously don't think that might be the best thing for these independent business owners.
No, probably not.
But I do think that might be the best thing overall for the shift that the comics industry needs to make.
Right.
And I can have those two separate thoughts exist for now, I guess, because it hasn't happened. It's a hypothetical.
What do you think of the name Graphite? doesn't excite me.
Yeah. And it seems counterintuitive.
Yeah. It's not.
No graphite.
No, not at all. At all, no. Okay, and our last bit of news, a little bit of news. It's a little teeny bit of news at the end here. There's a new series called Weapon Plus coming out.
Weapon Plus
from Marvel Comics, featuring Captain America and Wolverine together as they try to understand what the hell happened to them, because they were both turned into superheroes. That's great. Wait, what? Why are you so upset?
Weapon X.
Cap, you can like lift a car, man. You should be happy you took the super soldier serum. So this series is written by, shoot, I forget his name. I don't see it really quickly. Ethan Sachs. And it sounds like a cool idea. I mean, basically, it's trying to make Captain America and Wolverine tied together a little bit more, isn't it?
I think it's trying to make them all tied together and potentially also reveal the other weapon.
Like Phantom X.
Weapons, plural. Phantom X, the Separate Cuckoos are also one.
I didn't realize that.
I'm trying to find a list right now. I know there's also Skinless
Man.
What
about X-23? X-23.
She is
X-23, not. The best superhero name ever.
Yeah. It's not a good superhero name, but...
I don't know. You know, can I just say really quick? It's cool how each one of these were, you know, they're all experimented on, right? And turned into these superhumans. In whatever ways. Mm-hmm. That's cool that there's all these different ways they got there. I can see a world where there's many different mad scientists doing this all over the world. To say that they're all housed under one umbrella.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like it's just making it all, it's tidying it up too much.
Yep, I totally agree.
And it's unnecessary. Now, it could be cool. I'm not saying it won't be cool, but do we need this? I don't know.
I love Wolverine. Uh-huh. I love Captain America. I also love the Stepford Cuckoos.
Yeah.
If you told me that any of those three characters were related by a top secret weapons program, I would not believe you, aside from to say, that sounds like some comics bullshit. Which is exactly what it is.
And that's what we talk about every week.
Yeah, and obviously we're kind of bought into right? Yeah. Like, I like it to some degree, but I think you're totally right that it is, like, over-explaining stuff, keeping things too close to the chest. I don't know.
I don't. My first thought really was, like, oh, they're trying to make Cap more cool, because now he'll have this, like, dark past, or his origin will be tied to a dark past of some sort. I mean, the cover has him and Wolverine in the Weapon X style helmets in water, as if Cap was also made in the same way, which we know he wasn't, unless they retcon his past, which I really hope they don't do.
Yeah, I hope that
we find out that, like, in 1940 he was really in a tank, just like and Wolverine was next to him.
I mean, God, they're gonna
and they're gonna be like,
just have them both say Hail Hydra.
We were gonna use adamantium on him too, but we ran out.
Jesus, God,
Wolverine took so much adamantium on his bones.
So here's a list of Weapon 1 is Captain America, Proto-Sidon Queen. Weapon 3 is Skinless Man. Weapon 7 is Nuke. Weapon X is Wolverine, Sabretooth, and Deadpool. Weapon 12 is Huntsman. Weapon 13 is Phantom X. Weapon 14 is Stepford Cuckoos. Weapon 15 is Ultimaton. Ultimaton?
Is that a Transformer?
I've never heard of that character in my life. Weapon 16 is All God, and Weapon Infinity is Deathlok. I you know, I would like to see it be given the credence that it needs to be for me to invest in this, but I feel weird about it. I feel like it's Events Comics again.
Yeah.
Stop doing that.
Yeah, he's doing a really good job on Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. That's what it's called, I think. Yeah, and it's, even though it's like a book spinning out of a park, it has some interesting elements that are exciting.
Yeah, right.
And Will Sliney is doing the art on that. And he's doing a bang-up job, too.
Sliney.
So, next up.
Whoa.
Next segment.
Into the next segment.
What is our favorite books of last week? What are the two top books that we've liked so much? And to start this segment, we always talk about comicbookroundup.com. Which is like Rotten Tomatoes of comics, and we pick the top critic pick, and we take the top fan pick. We don't pick it. Those are just the top ones. And
we pick for them.
The top fan book of this week was with a 9.7 was Immortal Hulk number 19.
Yes, and this had over 20
reviews. Wow.
I pick things that only have over
20 reviews. Yes, we don't want it to,
So it has to have at least 4 reviews, to clarify.
And we've seen Hulk on the list quite a bit over the last 6 months we've been doing this podcast.
Have we?
I'm going to say 19 times.
Has every issue of Immortal Hulk since it started releasing been on this list? Yes.
Not 19 times, but definitely like 12 times.
Yep.
Wait, no, it's only been 6 months. Is this Double Ship book?
I don't think it is.
Critics will tell you that the best book of the last week was Hulk Immortal, which is a different title, but also number 19.
Would that it were.
They actually gave it a slightly lower score than fans with a 9.5, those assholes.
Yeah. God, do you think they're just punching down? I don't know. It's a great book. I'm going to have reviews of the second and third trade up this weekend, most likely, if not Monday at the latest, over at AIPTComics.com. Y'all should check them out. Y'all should check this comic out. It's awesome. I love it. Like, the horror angle for Hulk is realized really, really well. Ewing writes stuff that I never in a thousand years would have imagined. I love the body horror angle. I love the kind of like dysmorphia angle and all that stuff. Joe Bennett's art is mind-blowingly fantastic, and I totally get why this is up there every week. I struggle with thinking that it is the top book released every week that it's released.
It's hard to believe in that it's sort of a niche story. It's a horror story, right?
Right. I love seeing people that invested in a summertime horror story, I guess. Yeah. But also, yeah, I don't think it has as broad of appeal as it is ostensibly getting in critic and fan reviews. Maybe I'm being proven wrong by this, but it does seem a little to me like people are buying into the hype at this point and just saying, yeah, it's really fucking
good.
Yeah,
it's a steamroller. It's like a ball rolling down a hill, a rock rolling down a hill, right?
Right, which I joined in the chorus for another book this week.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
I flipped through Immortal Hulk. I didn't actually read it, unfortunately, yet. But there's a lot of crazy, crazy body horror in this one. And Betty Brant goes into her bird monster form, which is pretty cool. Which we've seen in past comics. So that's kind of cool. So there's some nostalgic vibes going on in there, too. What is your second favorite book, though? Is it Immortal Hulk?
It's not. Mostly because I'm not caught up yet. It probably would have been. My second favorite book of the week is Superior Spider-Man number 7, written by Christos Gage with art by Lan Medina. I'm going to call someone out on Comics Roundup, Roundup. There is a fan review of this book that says, genius plus an idiot team sucks.
Oh, wow.
That's because this book features the Superior Spider-Man, Otto Octavius, in the body of a new person named Elliot. It's really convoluted and confusing, but just know that it's evil Spider-Man. Not really evil, but he's an asshole.
That's clones for you.
it gets out there. That's Spider-Man for you. Teamed up with the West Coast Avengers to stop Frost Giants taking over San Francisco / LA.
Nice, that sounds fun.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, an asshole genius teamed up with a team of idiots, including Gwenpool, Quentin Quire, Hawkman, Hawkeye. Hawkman's in it, by the way. No, Hawkeye. You know, I was like, this rules. This is the perfect group of people for Otto to play against. Mm-hmm. He's an asshole. He bosses people around. He tells them what to do. He's like, I have a perfect plan in place for your powers already and stuff, and people are like, what the fuck, dude? Like, you're not Spider-Man. That's the whole core conceit of the book, and if you're not on board for that at the seventh issue, or if you read Dan Slott's amazing Superior Spider-Man run, I don't know why you're here at this point, because it was everything that I wanted. Especially after this book has had a couple of starts and stops.
Right.
I really kind of felt like Gage is struggling with getting this book on the rails with a consistent plot or consistent characterization. But this one, man, it is pitch perfect. Otto makes a comment about having a laser array in space that he can use to stop the Frost Giants. And Hawkeye is like, wait, are you talking about the laser array from blah, 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 blah? And Otto is like, yes. And Hawkeye goes, that's a death ray. It took the Avengers and Spider-Man to stop you from using that against Earth. And Otto says, I don't know why you would bring that up. It seems very insensitive and hurts my feelings.
Nice.
And I just like, it is this pitch perfect comedy.
Yeah, Gage has a really good handle on Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah, at least the dialogue.
Yes, for sure.
The art by Lamondina is really cool. There's some really cool stuff with scale. Like the heroes seem actually a lot smaller than the Frost Giants. And I love Gwenpool popping all over the place.
Nice.
Talking, narrating about how they're in an event comic, which is pretty
poignant. I love meta. This series is really good. I reviewed a couple of the issues for aptcomics.com, prior issues of this one. And it's been spot on. I hope it lasts.
Yeah, I hope that it finds its footing soon. I really felt like the sixth issue did that for me with this kind of Mephisto twist.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went straight into an event, which I was like, oh no, they're going to lose it again. But I actually really like this. So I think he's got a good handle on it now.
Sweet. Keep it up, Gage. Yeah. We believe in you.
Keep it up.
My second pick was not Immortal Hulk number 19. It was The Ride, Burning Desire number 1 from Image Comics. It's written by Doug Wagner with art by Daniel Hilliard and also with a backup drawn by Adam Hughes and also written by Wagner. I never read The Ride. This is actually like a 15-year anniversary of The Ride, so it's an ode to that. Basically, it's noir detective storytelling with some weird stuff thrown in too, just for fun, you know? We're talking, the main story is a woman who is a bouncer at a dancing club. It's not a strip club, it's a dancing club. And people dress up like Sailor Moon and a gimp. And it's, there are women dancing, but it's mostly men. So there's like dudes, the person in the Sailor Moon costume is this huge burly dude, and it's kind of funny, but people are into that. And as the story carries forward, you learn about this woman who she was the bouncer who is ex-detective, and we find out why she's not a detective anymore. And it kicks off a story where it ends with her getting a car, and so hence the ride. And it lays everything out well enough so that I'm excited to read the next one.
Yeah.
I will say that the backup by Adam Hughes, though, is stellar. On the cover, which actually I picked the cover as my favorite cover of last week, there's a woman in a unicorn, zip-up unicorn onesie costume, and she's got this paddle with hearts cut through it. Well, in the story, in the backup story, she's the star, and she's been kidnapped, and she's in this crazy-ass cellar with, like, all these sex toys all over the walls. And clearly, these dudes who kidnapped her are going to do terrible things to her. She's naked, so she puts on this unicorn onesie and basically beats two or three of them to death with, like, dildos and shit.
Oh, very Kill Bill.
Yes, it's badass. Yeah, I could totally see it being a sick movie, or at least a short story, or short film. And it is quick. It's only, like, 10 pages, but it's... Adam Hughes is so good. I wish he just did one long series... Again, he does mostly covers these days, but his ability to like tell the story with like perfectly timed close-ups and the skin tone on his characters is so realistic. It just draws you in. It's like you're one step away from watching a movie. So that's why it's my number two pick, and I recommend checking it out. I'm definitely going to read the next issue. I wasn't super floored with the main story, but the backup just totally made it for me, and I'm on board.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds awesome. It sounds very like Tarantino-esque, like I mentioned.
Yeah, cool. You don't get enough of that in comics these days.
Yeah, especially because it's the kind of the perfect medium for
exactly.
It, I think.
Yeah. You can go crazy with the like narrative structure and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So is your number one pick Immortal Hulk? This running joke's never going to end.
It's not, but it is a comic that everyone on the internet this week would tell you is equally amazing. It is Silver Surfer Black number 1, written by Donny Cates with art by Trad Moore.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to call it The Color by Dave Stewart.
Yeah.
This comic touches on everything that I love about Marvel's cosmic stuff.
Yep.
It takes a very simple core hook. What if Silver Surfer got thrown into a black hole and goes absolutely crazy, surrealist, poetic, introspective, high-flying action fantasy 70s, 80s, 90s with it. Like, all those things at once. I can't even begin to describe the way that it made me feel the first time I read it. Like, the pencils that Trad Moore turned in for this must have blown people's minds.
Could you imagine coloring it?
And then seeing what Dave Stewart has done with the colors. And also seeing a couple of pages from future issues and knowing, like, the kinds of things that are coming. Seeing Silver Surfer fight these, like, Dark Souls-esque god bosses at the end of this issue. And I don't want to spoil the twist, but the way that it just, like, takes this tiny, tiny thing. What if Silver Surfer was lost out in space and becomes this bigger-than-life, expansive thing about how he feels about his place in the universe and how he feels about being the Herald of Galactus and how he feels about time and space and infinity and war and herodom. It is so amazing and mesmerizing. And then it gets really, really, really small again right at the end. It gets right back down to this finite final cliffhanger that sets up the next issue so perfectly to be like, what if this happened to Silver Surfer? Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like, oh, fuck. If you've been reading anything that Cates has been putting out at Marvel over the last year. And to do that, and to not give away that he's doing that the entire issue.
That was a nice twist.
Wow. I've read this issue more than 5 times since I got the review copy. It is amazing the kind of storytelling that Trad Moore does visually by conveying that Silver Surfer is traveling through time and space, literally through time. And then Stewart does with colors, the way that they play around with form. It's so fluid and surrealist. Cates delivers this really, really heartfelt letter at the end of the book about learning that Stan Lee had passed away and rewriting the entire issue because he knew that Silver Surfer was Stan Lee's favorite character and that he had to get this Stan Lee story, this Silver Surfer story right for Stan Lee. And you read that back and you can see it. You can see that he's poured everything that he feels about heroes and their intentions into this narrative. It's really, really powerful, and I'm being hyperbolic and I'm talking it up, but I was really affected by it. I was really impacted by it, and I really, really loved it. It's getting a director's cut, which I think is totally deserved because it is one of the sleekest, most stunning, visually impressive comics I have seen in the last year at least.
The best Silver Surfer stories are those are that type, right? They inspire you.
Yes. I think so. Yeah.
Cool. I really liked it too.
The Silver Surfer one shot that came out last year was this.
Oh, yeah,
as well.
For sure. I loved that. Yeah, that was collected in a collection of one shots.
Yeah, that was fantastic. That also had Teeny Howard's Captain America one shot, which I also loved. Yeah.
After you say stuff like go on and on like that and get into the details, I should just always say, me too. And then just move on.
Yeah. What is your number one pick? Because I could talk the same way about your number one pick.
My number one pick is Immortal Hulk. No, it's not. It's Spider-Man Life Story number 4 by Chip Zdarsky and the great Mark Bagley. I was going to say late. He's not dead.
Oh, the late. Breaking news.
This one's set in the 90s. And Spider-Man's old now. He's getting old. You can call him old, I think. And so Zdarsky is clearly homaging classic Spider-Man stories by sort of doing his own thing, by weaving them together. And he's making this brand new basket. And if you were to lay it next to all the other baskets he's paid homage to, you go, oh, this basket looks familiar, but it's also new and it's mine. And that's what this series is. Doc Ock shows up in this one. There's, I don't want to spoil it. Ben Reilly shows up in this one. He's in the first page, so I can say that. And there's some interesting retelling, basically, of some classic Spidey lore, and it's deeply fulfilling. I still have a couple little issues, nitpicks with the series, but every issue is like getting a snapshot of the most important moment in Peter Parker's life of that decade. And what Zdarsky's doing is, with every issue, I keep thinking, well, what happened in between? He's leaving it wide open for your imagination to run wild. I wouldn't be surprised if someone, if not Zdarsky, explores this Elseworlds universe again. And since there is a Spider-Verse, maybe we'll see this version of Spider-Man in another story. Although I have a feeling that it's going to end with him possibly on his deathbed.
I mean, I think that that's probably what the next issue will do, in the same way that when Nathan and I were talking about Last Night on Earth very recently, it's like you own a version of a character that will exist before and after any of us if you show a character's birth, life, and death. Yeah. And it seems like that's what this series is tailor-made to do. Right. Zdarsky just happens to be doing it really fucking well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the solicit for the sixth issue is, the year is 2019, and the 17-year-old web-slinger is about to embark on his final adventure. So, bye-bye, Peter.
Yeah, all over again. It'll make me cry again. Oh,
please, don't let him die.
I think, like, every time Peter Parker has died, I've cried. Aww. Even when I know he's coming back, like, next issue.
Yeah. He is a surrogate for who we are, too, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I also have Spider-Man.
In my mind. In our next segment, we are celebrating Pride Month this month. Last week, we talked about our favorite comics. What would you say? LGBTQ plus comics or creators.
Yeah, that's fair.
And yep. This week in our segment, we want to talk about how do comics improve representation? Controversial if you're a racist or a bigot, I mean.
Which, going off that real quick, the all-time best Stan soapbox is printed in Marvel Comics this week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep. Now, I'm not suggesting we have all the answers or any of the answers, but these are just some of our suggestions on how comics could improve representation. Can I go first? I feel like with the superhero, so I'm going to stick with Marvel and DC mostly. There's good representation as far as some indie publishers, but when I think of comics, I think of superheroes, and I feel like that's an area that could use a lot of work. I know there are gay characters in both DC and Marvel, but they're not quite prominent enough for me. I know Apollo and Midnighter, who I talked about last week, are very powerful heroes. And I think that's important because, you know, they're not just these side characters that can do these lame or weak powers. They're up there with all the others. It's just they're not in the limelight enough. And I feel like Marvel and DC, if they really mean what they say when it comes to, you know, more representation in their plethora of series, they need a character like on the Avengers or the Justice League or one of these teams that is gay or another element. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And sure,
because
absolutely.
I mean, but the problem is like someone's gonna go, "Oh, what are you gonna do? Make Batman gay?"
I think the problem is that I totally agree with you, and also know that Wonder Woman is supposed to be bisexual,
right? But that's never played up.
It's never played up.
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to say, was like, for all of Greg Rucka and Gail Simone, Grant Morrison, weird fetishizing a little bit, but for all of their great work in talking about it, like, where is it? You know? And Greg Rucka said a really weird thing, which was that, like, Rucker responded to haters that consensual sex with women is just as important to Wonder Woman as the truth is to Superman, which I feel very strange about because it's like making someone's identity or making someone's bisexuality all about sex,
right?
Or all about, and that, like, Wonder Woman has always had that problem. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I'm not a prude at all. You want to get into the weird, cheeky fetish stuff that Wonder Woman is based on? Cool, fine. Wear your harness to Pride. I don't give a shit. I will too. But when your entire perspective of a character's identity or their bisexuality or their queerness is, oh yeah, she sleeps with women too, that feels weird and gross to me.
Because it's played up for
male gaze. Exactly, yeah. So I think the thing for me is like, no, don't make Batman gay. Wonder Woman already is.
Right. Why aren't we talking about that? Or why isn't that part of her character now, currently?
Write it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sure, I feel sometimes that like, I don't want every story to be about that. I don't want every gay story to be about coming out, because gay people have already lived that experience. They don't need always to be told that it's okay to come out,
right,
or that their identity is okay, or that straight people are validating by telling them that it's all right and patting them on the back.
What right? we need come are on out. People, you know, people that are normal characters and they're not playing it up. Like, that's
right.
not who they are.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what's lacking.
Like, why can't a hero, I don't know, I don't know if this is similar, is it? A hero being in a wheelchair, but no one really, it's not part of them. It's not like characters are referring to it. It's not like that's what's keeping him down or whatever. He's just a guy in the comic, you know?
Yeah, sure. And I think, you know, I hesitate to compare someone's sexuality with disability.
Right, that's not what I meant.
But for someone's identity, disability is very much a part of their identity, and it's very much a part of their worldview. But it's obviously not all of their personality,
right,
just like
right.
you're saying. On the flip side of that, yeah, I do want queer stories to be told about characters that are queer.
What do you think Marvel could do?
Right?
I mean, I get your DC point, but what could... The problem is all these characters were created at a time when none of this was happening. I mean, no one was writing about this stuff, and...
I mean, do you really want to know?
Sure.
Yeah, what I think? Don't put Bobby back in the fucking closet.
Yeah, that's a bad move.
I cannot believe that came out this year.
I wonder what the point of... I mean, what's their end game with that?
Continuity, I guess.
Right. So, now he can come out again. And they can sell more books.
Which is what... Again, that's what I was just saying, right? Like, that's not the only story that queer people want to read. Mm-hmm. But I'll be... damned if it's not the only story that straight people want to write.
Right. I mean, the other option is new heroes, new characters. It just doesn't feel like it's enough to me, though. Like I was saying before, we've got these superhero teams, and
yeah,
they're all straight. They're all not they're just representing
right.
one type of person, a straight white person.
Right.
I mean,
right.
African Americans aren't represented very well still. I mean, how many African American heroes are there?
No, I think for the black community, you have to look at books like Bitterroot.
Right.
Which are like amazing and fantastic. But yeah, it's so
just,
lacking.
I mean, maybe it's, I mean, superhero comics are also handcuffed, right? There's only so much they can change until people freak out and they're like, that's not my Spider-Man. And
probably it isn't.
I mean, yeah.
I don't
mean,
know.
Look at Chips. Was it Chip? We were just talking about this. Chip Zdarsky showing you a Spider-Man that actually ages in real time. I mean, that's never happened before.
Right.
Obviously,
exactly.
It's a side story. It's only a miniseries. But if, like, when we talked about last week, C.B. Sobolski was saying characters will die for real and it will last. Like, okay, well, can they also, like, change and grow? I mean, we've seen Batman. He has a son now. That's a big development. But... how about further development, representing more people?
Can Iceman stay gay?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly that. I totally agree.
Maybe it's because, okay, hot take. Maybe it's because a lot of people working in these companies are straight. There's too many straight people, and they're worried about...
That's exactly
right. Right, so they're worried about writing these stories or you know, editing them or whatever, and then coming under fire because, you know... they're straight white people.
I mean, I think that the answer to that is hire
right.
people from the LGBTQ
right.
community to write LGBTQ stories.
Right.
I think the other problem, especially I've seen with Marvel, is that they, very vocal part of their community. I mean, this is the company that was going to partner with Northman Group,
mm-hmm.
the fucking gun
yep.
company. A very vocal part of their story group will say, oh, you're introducing a new gay character in a story? What are you trying to fill your quota?
Right.
Right? And Marvel bucks to
right.
that. They back out or they say, well, this character is only going to be in this story. They're not part of the larger Marvel universe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I could talk about this for an entire episode.
And it's just a segment.
But it's just a segment. And, you know, I really loved that last week we led with what our favorite things are. I love this other flip side of the coin, which is that there's a lot that still needs to be challenged.
Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done.
Because I celebrate and cherish, and I know people that celebrate and cherish that Wonder Woman is bisexual. Mm-hmm. But I also meet and tell so many more people than you would ever think that that is true.
Who don't know that's a thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because it's kind of being hidden. It's like a, right?
Right. They want it both ways.
Right. Yeah, you're right. And yeah, well, I mean, they can't go all in because they're too afraid of upsetting a part of their audience.
Yeah. And I guess I just want to say for Pride Month, because I think it's really important, and it's really important to people like me in the community, own it. Please write and publish stories for us that we can be prideful in. Peter Parker is a straight white man who sometimes loves Felicity and some Felicia and sometimes loves
I thought you were going to say the show.
Yeah, and also Felicity, a character I made up.
No, the TV show, right? Isn't that a TV show?
Sure. But Spider-Man is anyone.
Right, like Spider-Bite.
So just write those characters, please.
Right.
And if you say that a character is someone, make them that way.
And that's inspiring. And it could be inspiring if someone has a great idea. It's just someone needs to come up with it, and it has to be approved, and it's probably not going to happen because no one wants to rock the boat.
People living their lives and knowing who they are, whether they're apologetic for it or not, oftentimes not apologetic for it, is inspiring. Mm-hmm. It's the people that I love and appreciate the most.
Right. It's hard to come by.
It is. So it's a bit of a downer, but that is how I feel.
Well, I know how to make you excited. In our next segment, top books for next week, what are you excited about, buddy?
This is a good one. I think I've picked this every time I know it's coming out, too.
You did pick it last time. I know that for sure.
Weird number 4, written by Kurt Pyers with art by Antonio Fuso. This is the last issue of Weird until they get a season 2 or it's renewed or something, because it's definitely got enough super awesome ideas for that to be warranted. After what happened in Weird number 3, where they just kind of blew it open and made it this weird, like, existential horror drama about not just superheroes, but also, like, the covert ops world.
Yeah.
A kind of, like, introspective Metal Gear Solid type story that I was very, very into, while also doing, a little bit of the authority with, like, superheroes and stuff like that. This kind of everything that you think is true isn't true. But what can you do about that, given that you're immortal, right?
Yep.
Like, your whole life is, what are you going to do? You've been living for forever. You're going to try and dismantle this entire life that you've been living, or this entire character that you've built up, right? To be told that it's all false is a really, really interesting idea, and I don't know where a person goes from there. I can't even fathom it. So I know that Kurt has an idea for that, and I think Antonio's art really gets across that existential dread and horror angle really well, while also doing some really cool like action scenes, like a dude taking out a bunch of people on an airplane, or a dude punching a dude's head off, or, you know, other cool shit like that. Like, it's cool also, right? It mirrors the violence that he's feeling in his internal struggle externally very well. And so I just like it for that a lot. I'm very excited for it.
Nice.
I hope they stick the landing. I think that they will. And I think that they'll probably stick it so hard that we'll see more of Weird in the future.
Nice. Very cool. I need to check that out when it comes out in trade.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
My pick for next week comes from Valiant Entertainment. It's called Psylords number 1. And I believe it's based on Psylords from 1994, their first appearance anyway. This is a new series by Fred Van Lent, which I actually interviewed him for APDComics.com. The interview went up this past week with art by Renato Guedes. It's about 4 astronauts who wake up in an otherworldly prison with no memory of how they got there. What is their connection to the Psylords? And how will they escape? Let me tell you what a Psylord is. It's an immortal empowered by their nanite-rich blood. Although they do not age and heal quickly, they can suffer trauma related to deaths. basically, they're superheroes, right? Now, I've obviously had the chance to read this already, and it's pretty dope. The Guidas does a really good job with environments. You really do believe they're in this hyper-realistic alien ship of some sort. It's like organic, almost like Alien or Aliens, or Prometheus, I guess, if you like that one. Anyway, it basically is a standard premise we've seen before where these people, you wake up and you don't know what's going on, and then you have powers and you just deal with it to try to get out of there. And we don't know why. So it's an exciting thriller action comic book. I think it's a good first start, and I'm very curious on seeing how where this goes from here, especially with the sharp art that's very like photorealistic. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds dope.
Yeah, dude. I want to read more Valiant. I used to read and review a lot of it, and yeah. I just fell off the wagon, and I haven't had a good reason to jump back in across the line. They only put out like 4 books tops a week, so it's not that hard.
I think that they're also doing like a bit of an editorial overhaul. Mm. I know that they snagged Heather Antos, that's right, who did a lot of the Star Wars line editing and like.
And
Glenpool,
she was on the Star Wars podcast a week or two ago.
She was on the Star Wars at AIPTComics.com. Most recent episode. Yeah, we're both so busy plugging.
I know. Sorry, cross plugging.
that I think that the new direction, the new line that she's developing, I would be really interested in, and that might be a good jumping on point for me for Valiant because I really like Divinity. Mm. But I didn't read much else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. XO Manowar, is it XO or is it X0 Manowar? That's had some really high points. Mostly written
yeah,
by
Yeah, I don't know. I was going to say, is it 10?
Is it C3PO or is it C3P0?
I don't know.
In our next segment.
No, because that makes you say P. I don't know.
Do you not say P?
Oh, I guess I do. I guess you say P either way.
Look, when I say C3PO, I don't say the C. Nick, in our next segment, judging by the cover, Junior, we talk about our favorite cover art that's out next week. And guess what I picked?
Do you actually want me to guess? Because I can see
it
on the show notes.
Hellboy and the BPRD, The Beast of Vargu. It's a variant cover by Duncan Figredo, and it is really cool. The so I did judging by the cover this week. This is a weekly column on Mondays that Eric Klein hosts, edits, does it all. And we, as staff, join him. And I picked this one, obviously, for my covers. It's a really cool cover because of the contrast. There's Hellboy, top left, jumping down and about to beat down on this weird feathered monster covered in blood. Meanwhile, behind them is this like woman with her hands. She's got these wrinkly hands clawing like the air. Her eyes are closed, and she's huge. She's like a giant compared to them. And yet she's cast in this white with very soft, I'm going to say gray, detailing in high detail all these bits of her. So she's behind them. It's creating this contrast of Hellboy jumping down, high detail as well. He's in color, though. Monster's in color. It's just, it really pops. And I want to know why Hellboy's punching this monster bird guy. And I want to know why this woman is clawing the air. So it's got me.
Yeah, that's kind of how the best Hellboy covers make me feel. I generally want to pick Hellboy for like most of these, and then I'm like, I can't pick Hellboy or the BPRD books every week.
Yeah.
So I try to switch.
Yeah, the style is so good.
Yeah, it's really good. My pick is Miles Morales Spider-Man number 7. This is written by Saladin Ahmed. It's a really fantastic series if folks haven't checked it out. The cover art is by Patrick O'Keefe, the art director for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And it is an original cover made for the comic. It's not a still from the movie or anything like that. But it looks, you would be forgiven for thinking so because it looks exactly
like that. It
does.
I said this before we started the show.
Yeah. The only difference is that Miles is not in the kind of like shorts and jacket or sneakers that he is in the movie. He's kind of, and the suit is adapted for what he looks like in the comic.
Right.
A little bit more. But it's just him swinging over a busy New York City street. You can see, like, the cars are saying honk and beep, typical car things. I mean, I really don't have a whole lot to say about it. It looks exactly like the visual aesthetic of Into the Spider-Verse, which is it felt so informed by comics, that movie did. It was like the perfect comic book movie. Mm-hmm. And now to see that visual language get sent back over to comics, it just feels so right. And I really love it. And I really love the synergy that's going on, especially for Miles, a character I love very, very much. The detail on this is really cool. The zippitone, the halftone is really, really cool. The colors are cool. It's very dynamic. I hope that it looks good with the text on it somewhere because this is a Virgin cover, and I don't know where they're going to put the title and the creators and all that. But as a still, it's really fantastic. Like, I would actually love a series of these, like Miles, Gwen, Spider-Man Noir, all of them, as like small prints or something, because this just perfectly encapsulates the visual aesthetic of that.
Be a good cell phone wallpaper.
It would be. I might do that right now.
And he's gone, folks. So next.
Yeah, there I go. So find the Google
Are you really
machine
doing it?
And
God, this guy's a multitasker.
My background right now is Spider-Man Black number one, so I'll just switch that out. I'm very
We're running a bit long, but our next segment is Back Catalog, or the LCS picks. This is where we pick something from an old comic that we recently rediscovered and liked a lot. I want to talk about it really briefly, super quick. Great. Awesome. What? So, I recently reviewed a new collection called Behold Galactus, the Fantastic Four, which basically has the first three appearances of Galactus, or at least the three major appearances of a Galactus, basically trying to eat Earth or being saved by the Fantastic Four. And in issue number 49 of Fantastic Four, which is the first time he attacks Earth, Silver Surfer is like hanging out with Thing's girlfriend, Alicia. And I didn't realize that was happening in this book. But one of the most shocking moments, and it's crazy, we read a lot of comic books. We've been reading comic books our whole lives. And yet you read an old comic book and you go, did that really happen? And in this book, Galactus gets basically frustrated with the Fantastic Four. He's sick of them bothering him. So he calls upon the Punisher, a giant, well, not very giant, but a robotic frog-looking robot to take out the Fantastic Four, basically to give them something to fight. Actually, he's about as big as the Thing. He actually looks quite short. Anyway, I looked it up, and this character, the Punisher here, came out about 10 or 12 years before the actual Punisher came out. So technically, this is the very first Marvel Comics Punisher. This purple, blue, green dude with flashlights on his head. Seriously, look it up. He's really weird looking. Thank you, Jack Kirby.
It's really not the aesthetic that you
We love
think.
You, Jack Kirby.
Thank you, Jack Kirby, for everything you did.
So anyway, I highly recommend this. Actually, I reviewed this graphic novel for EAPTComics.com. Check out my review. I'll talk about it more in depth there. But I recommend checking out issue number 49 by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
I really do want to know if Donny Cates also read this. And if that's the reason that he made the Punisher the Herald of Galactus.
Could you imagine? That would be really like a deep cut cool little thing.
Yeah, and it would be something that he could like James Gunn it and be like, no one has figured that out.
Yeah, you're right.
And you and I could collect old Cates' gold.
We have the answer, sir.
Yeah.
What's your back catalog pick?
My back catalog pick was actually re-released last week as a True Believers number one for $1. I'm sure it's still in LCS's, so if you want to pick it up. It is The Amazing Spider-Man number 101, the debut of a monster called Morbius.
Ooh.
You've got the six-armed Spider-Man getting hit backwards, slapped backwards down a set of stairs, and Morbius on the cover, and it says, "Fool! It will take more than a freak with six arms to stop a vampire."
Bum, bum, bum.
And I just, it's such comic silliness.
Yeah.
You know, like, I also love that this implies that Morbius thought that Spider-Man's plan was coming at him with six arms.
Yeah.
Like, Morbius was like, oh, I fought people with six arms before.
Seven arms, even.
Seven arms would have done it. You know, like, I don't know. It's so weird. And it's like, did they think people were going to see this and be like, oh, six-armed Spider-Man can't beat him. Who is he? A monster called Morbius? Like,
it's a cool name.
What the fuck? It rules. I think Morbius actually rules pretty hard.
And Jared Leto will ruin that for everyone.
Oh,
maybe
he will. He will, unless he leans super hard into it the bad way and just, or the good way, and just wears fake vampire teeth, those plastic ones or something.
Oh yeah, they could do that.
I don't know. It's not going to be good, but this cover is good just because it implies a very, very comics line of reasoning that I don't understand but love anyway.
Yeah, it's like an iconic cover, super iconic.
It is, yeah. I think any of these like villain debuts mm-hmm. are, but also like Morbius's muscles don't make any sense.
Who drew it, do you know?
I don't.
Look it up, folks.
I know that I knew the number. I knew the issue number off the top of my head, but I don't remember the cover artist. I apologize.
You know, I'm going to forgive you this one time.
All right. That's cool.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's older comics. Sometimes it's hard to find out who the artists are because... it's Gil Kane, John Romita Sr., and Artie Samek for the cover.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, Morbius himself drew it.
Speaking of vampires, in the next segment, Off Topic Top Shelf, where we talk about something we like right now that isn't comics related, I want to talk about a show called What We Do in the Shadows, based on the hit movie. I don't know if it was a hit, actually. Cult classic movie.
I think it did really well.
Hilarious movie, directed by Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords and... Thank you. I always get his name wrong. Who's also, I think they both were writers and one directed. It doesn't matter. They both were involved in this TV show, which is a 10-episode show. It's basically like The Office, mockumentary of some cameramen shooting in the home of vampires. And they are really bad at being vampires. And some of them, one of them used to be like the lord of like Transylvania or something, some made up country. And now he's like super lame.
Transylvania is a real
country. No, I mean his country's fake in the show.
Oh, okay. I was like, that's a real place.
This series, though, highly, highly recommended. I laugh out loud almost every minute, maybe 7 of the 10 episodes. There's actually an episode, I don't want to spoil it too much, but there's an episode where... Think of every single movie vampire you've ever seen in movies. In a scene, the actors who played these vampires show up in one room, but they're actually themselves. So,
oh, that's really good. Like the
exactly.
Actors.
So Tilda Swinton playing. She is actually Tilda Swinton in the scene, but she got the role as a vampire because she really is a vampire in real life, according to this show. Yeah, really and good. I don't want to spoil all of them, but there's some deep cut vampire actors in this scene.
That's hilarious. I bet people flipped.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's really
good. So, anyway, I highly recommend it. The production value is really good. It's really funny. I mean, if you like those, you know, mockumentary, like The Office. It's like The Office, but you know, it's weird because it's vampires. Check mm-hmm. it out. Yeah.
And they can't be defeated by a man with six arms. So,
could you imagine if they reference that? I mean, it could.
Oh, yeah. I hope they
like,
do.
No one would get it, but well, I mean, we would. Now that we have this conversation,
you and me would.
We just connected the dots.
I really hope that they end up delivering on their sequel movie called Werewolves, also about werewolves.
Yes, yes. There are those werewolves are in the show. Not the guy that was in Flight of the Conchords. I forget his name now. Who was one of the main werewolves? Mm-hmm. He's not in the show, unfortunately, but. They do have a werewolf confrontation in one of the episodes. But they don't repeat themselves,
that's
too.
Awesome.
Like, if you've seen the movie, it's all new jokes. They don't make that joke like, we're not swearwolves, we're werewolves.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Awesome. No, I need to check it out. Especially because it's all said and done now and I can actually watch
it. It's highly relatable, too, if you work in an office because there's a energy vampire in the show who just talks at people and bores them so much that he sucks the energy out of them.
That's really good.
You know what else is really good? This podcast.
I thought
it was
good.
Thank you for listening. Please like, subscribe, tell your friends about it. And if you give us a review, we'll smile a little bit more next time.
I do want to say that some weeks ago, Dave asked me to say that I love our listeners. And I ended up chickening out and saying that I love Venom.
Mm.
So I do want to say today, I love Carnage.
Oh, I saw that twist coming, and it still hit me.
Came back around, got you on the backside.
Which symbiote will it be next, folks? Come back and listen.
We'll see.
Thank you.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.